Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hey everybody, we've got a great one today. You know, for a change, Liz Oyer, who was the pardon attorney during the Biden administration, joins us to talk about the pardons that Trump has been giving out, but not for free, necessarily. Turns out that he's departed from the practice that presidents have been using since George Washington pardoned those who fought in the Whiskey Rebellion. Trump's been giving them to his supporters and has been profiting from them. But first, the news of the week. Earlier this week, the Coast Guard said it would no longer classify the swastika as hate speech, but it reversed itself. But why the Coast Guard is classifying hate speech? Well, evidently, if a ship is within 3 miles of our coast and is flying a flag with a swastika or a noose, the Coast Guard can fire on it. The Coast Guard is also in charge of defining what is or isn't pornography. Okay, the real news. President Trump hosted Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman at the White House this past week, first at a press conference in the Oval Office. MBS is, of course, a brutal dictator, but he does a lot of business with the Trump Organization, which has been developing a bunch of extremely lucrative projects in his country. And in exchange, Trump is selling the Saudis F-35 jets and providing them access to the most advanced AI chips. Things at the press conference turned testy when an ABC reporter asked about the murder of Washington Post reporter Jamal Khashoggi, who in 2018 was strangled at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul by Saudi agents and then dismembered with a bone saw. The last few minutes of Khashoggi's life were recorded on the consulate's audio tape and transcribed, but his body was disposed of and never found. U.S. intelligence concluded that MBS had ordered the murder. So when the reporter asked about it, Trump got very angry at her and lied, saying that the U.S. had concluded that MBS had nothing to do with the murder, and then went on to say this about Khashoggi: a lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Trump said that and went on, whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. Things happen. That evening, the president threw a state dinner for MBS at the White House. Don Jr. and Eric weren't there. That would have been bad optics. And Elon Musk was there, but he didn't bring his chainsaw. And of course, the House and Senate voted to release the Epstein files unanimously, except for a single vote in the House. And the president signed it after reversing his long-held stance against releasing the files because, according to Attorney General Pam Bondi, there was nothing there. But the files can't be released if there's a standing investigation, which could be compromised, and the Attorney General announced that she was starting investigations of Bill Clinton, Lawrence Summers, and Democratic mega-donor Reid Hoffman. So those will go on for months and maybe longer, giving the Justice Department the time to redact Trump's name wherever it appears. Will that work? Will Mondi and Trump get away with it? I don't think so. After all, Congress voted 427-1 to open the files. Well, at least we have a great one today. You know, for a change, lawyer Liz Oyer joins us to discuss the Trump pardons. Liz, thanks for joining me. You got to be a President Biden's pardon clerk.
Well, I didn't work for the president. My office was actually non-political, so I was the pardon attorney throughout most of the Biden administration, but also into the Trump administration because I was a career employee of the Justice Department.
Of course.
In the Justice Department, all career staff, no politicals in the office of the pardon attorney.
And you were the first public defender to be the pardon attorney. And the current pardon attorney is Ed Martin. He's not a public defender.
He's not.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. He is the first person that I'm aware of who's not a career employee to hold that position. He is a political operative. You probably know.
Yes. You say you were also in the Trump administration, but not for long.
Not for long. That's exactly right.
What happened? How did this is the Mel Gibson
thing? This is the Mel Gibson thing. I was fired very abruptly in March after I made clear that I was not going to recommend that the Attorney General reinstate Mel Gibson's right to purchase a firearm. He had a conviction for domestic violence that prohibited him under federal law from purchasing a gun. He tried to buy a gun. He was denied. And so he asked the Attorney General to use her statutory authority to reinstate his gun ownership rights. And instead of just doing that, her staff asked me to recommend that she do that, which I think was intended to give it a veneer of legitimacy. And I was unwilling to do it because of the serious dangers of people with domestic violence history owning guns. And very shortly after I declined multiple invitations to change my mind, I was fired.
Did they end up giving him the right to own a gun?
Yes. After I was fired, they did it anyway.
And a few months later, you testified in front of Congress.
Yeah, that's right. About a month later, I testified in front of what was called a bicameral spotlight hearing. So it was just Democrats from both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees.
And you testified that they sent U.S. Marshals to your house.
Yes, they did.
When they knew you were testifying.
Yeah, the Friday night before I was scheduled to testify, the hearing was scheduled for Monday. The Friday night before, I was at a performance at the Kennedy Center with my parents and my husband when a DOJ employee out of the goodness of their heart contacted me around 9 o'clock at night to give me a heads up that there were armed special deputy U.S. Marshals on their way to my home to deliver me a letter.
And what did the letter say?
The letter was a warning about testifying. It warned me of all of the legal risks that I would face by testifying before members of Congress.
Boy, that's creepy. Did Bondi ever apologize for that?
Nobody ever apologized for anything, but I'm not in need of an apology. That was obviously very upsetting for me and my family because at the time I have a teenager. My teenager was home alone. I wasn't home when I got word that these folks were on their way to my house. They were supposed to arrive there at 10 o'clock at night. And this person inside the Justice Department was able to help me get those folks called off when I shared that I was really concerned about, you know, how upsetting it was going to be to my child to see these people show up at the door.
Oh, well, that's nice. Okay. How did the pardon get in the Constitution? Now, Hamilton advocated for the president to have the pardon in the Federalist Papers, right?
Yeah, the pardon power was hotly debated among the founders, and ultimately, largely due to the influence of Alexander Hamilton, it was put in the Constitution, despite the fact that it's really a vestige of monarchy. The pardon power was historically the British power of kings. Yeah. So some of the founders were skeptical of whether there was any place for that in our constitutional democracy.
But they vested it in the president. Well, it was first used by George Washington for the Whiskey Rebellion or something.
Yeah, it had been used. It's been used throughout history by presidents sort of trying to, I think, move past historical events for the purpose of trying to bring unity to our country at different times. Different presidents have used it with that goal. I think the founders of the Constitution just assumed the president was always going to use it for the public good or for what the president viewed as the public good. Right. But that hasn't been how it has played out under the current president, unfortunately. I mean, candidly, there have been times throughout history when different presidents have granted pardons that have been ill-advised and have not been well received by the public and have been rightly criticized. But for the most part, most presidents have tried to use the pardon power in a way that serves the public good.
Okay. Well, so back to your job. What was the process under Biden anyway? And I assume under pretty much every president before him, but what was the process? How does it work? Someone applies for a pardon, right?
Yeah, the Office of the Pardon Attorney has existed in some form within the Justice Department for over 100 years. And the role of the office is to make recommendations to the president about who is deserving of clemency. Thousands of people, you know, even sometimes upward of 10,000 people per year apply for this form of relief through the Justice Department. And they have, there's an application process in place that is really quite rigorous. To get a recommendation in support of clemency from the Office of the Pardon Attorney, you have to cross a number of hurdles that are all based on merit, showing that you really deserve the opportunity to be considered for that extraordinary form of relief by the president and that you've earned it. And that if you are granted clemency, you will not go back out there and embarrass the president or endanger your fellow citizens by committing future crimes.
So who speaks to these people who are applying? I mean, most of them are in prison, are they, or some formally in prison?
About 80% of people who apply are incarcerated people who are seeking commutations of sentence, meaning a reduction of their prison sentence. Mm-hmm. About 20% are people who are out in the community who have rehabilitated themselves or are trying to demonstrate that they've rehabilitated themselves and are seeking a presidential pardon. A full pardon confers forgiveness, essentially, from the president, and it's different from a commutation, which just reduces the prison portion of the sentence.
I see. Did Biden grant more acts of clemency than any other president?
He did. He granted a whole lot of commutations of sentence at the end of his administration that added up to quite a large number. He actually granted very few pardons compared to some other presidents. He only granted 80 pardons, but he granted mm-hmm. quite a lot of commutations of sentence.
Okay. And a lot of these were drug, like marijuana, or what were they?
The majority were for drug offenses. Mm-hmm. Starting under President Obama, there was a lot of interest in using the clemency power to correct some of the excessive sentences that were imposed in the war on drugs era. Mm-hmm. President Obama granted almost 2,000 commutations of sentence to people who had been sentenced under outdated mandatory minimum laws or received sentencing enhancements for nonviolent drug offenses. And President Biden attempted to continue that tradition and to use commutations to reduce outdated and overly lengthy sentences for nonviolent drug offenses.
And of course, he pardoned son Hunter.
Yeah, he did.
And other members of the family at the end. I'm assuming that you weren't consulted on that. Hunter was looking at time, right?
Yeah, that, really, frankly, was very disheartening to me and to my colleagues who were not consulted about that, who would not have recommended that, and who believed that that really diminished the pardon power in the eyes of the public. I think that it unfortunately laid the groundwork for abuses of the pardon power on a much larger scale by Donald Trump in a way that is much more corrupt. So yeah, that was a low point for the use of the pardon power, was President Biden's pardon of his son Hunter.
On the other hand, I understand. You know, it's your son and your only surviving son. And
well, one of the things that folks were critical of, including myself at the time, was the way that was messaged, was sort of, you know, my son has been treated unfairly by the criminal mm-hmm. justice system. My background coming into the role of pardon attorney was as a federal public defender. So I did that job for 10 years before I joined the Justice Department. And I have seen how harsh the criminal justice system can be in many cases. It felt, unfortunately, like President Biden was not able to see that aspect of the justice system until it hit very close to home with his son, Hunter. But, you know, lots of other people have sons who are being treated in ways that seem unfair to them by the criminal justice system. And I think a lot of Americans viewed the selection of the president's son to receive a pardon as, you know, favoritism, nepotism, that sort of thing.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Liz Oyer. Hey, everybody. I'd like to get an update on how Nelly is doing. Now, Nelly is Peter's dog who's been enjoying our sponsor, Ollie's Protein Pack Meals. Now, Peter, tell me about Nelly.
Nelly's great. She is about 7 years old, we think. Her backstory is a little cloudy, but we adopted her during COVID.
And how long has Nelly been eating Ollie?
She's been eating it for 3 months. And here's the thing. Ollie bought ads on the show about 3 months ago, and they sent us a package so that she could try it out. And she loved it so much that we actually just became members of Ollie. We just bought our own membership.
I'll bet. Imagine that happens a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. It was immediate how her behavior changed, her appearance changed. We were just out on her walk. She gets so excited for her walks now. She's a much more active dog.
Wow. What are the meals like?
So what you do is when you sign up for Ollie, you give them some information about your dog. You can give them a photo, but you tell them how old the dog is, how much they weigh, and they sort of cater a menu based on what your dog needs to be eating. And so then they send these packets of things like pork with blueberries and chicken with carrots and really delicious sounding meals if you're a dog.
Well, we're a human. Some of that sounds pretty good.
I haven't been brave enough to try.
And she's been enjoying all this, and she's on her third month of this.
She's on her third month, Al, and we're going to keep going.
Well, thanks, Peter. You know, your dog's well-being starts with their food, and that's why Ollie delivers fresh, human-grade food that your dog will love.
That's right.
Head to ollie.com/franken, tell them all about your dog, and use code Franken to get 60% off your welcome kit when you subscribe today. And we are back with Liz Oyer. Let's move on back to Trump. First term. He didn't grant that much clemency, right?
He granted enough. Clemency was a mixed bag under Trump 1. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people who were politically connected with the president who received pardons. People like Paul Manafort. Yeah, exactly. And
Jared Kushner's father and...
Yes, there were people who leveraged political connections to get pardons, and those did not go through the ordinary vetting process.
Right.
But there were some deserving people who received pardons under Trump's first administration as well. I think that was largely the influence of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, who have been known in some circles as supporters of criminal justice reform and were trying to ensure that some folks who didn't have political connections were also considered for clemency.
This is in contrast, maybe, to this term.
In very stark contrast to the current term. Under the current Trump presidency, it's really all about political connections and money who is being considered for pardons. There's nobody who is receiving serious consideration for clemency who even comes close to meeting the criteria that have long been used by the Justice Department for recommending clemency to the president.
Well, the first day, he, of course, pardoned
1,600 or close to 1,600 of the rioters or the people who came into the Capitol. I'm guessing you weren't consulted on that.
No, it was the first. It was the first day of Trump's presidency, and I got a news alert on my phone, just like the rest of America, announcing that these pardons had come down. It really came as quite a shock.
Were you part of the administration then, or had you already been hired?
I was still working in my, same office, same job as pardon attorney. I believed naively, it turns out, that there was a path forward for clemency work, even under this new administration. And it turned out not to be the case. Nobody was interested in my opinion or advice. And in fact, nobody was interested in following the traditional guidelines that the Justice Department plays in the clemency review process.
So these pardons and the commutation of the Proud Boys and
the Oath Keepers. Yeah.
The Oath Keepers. Those two got commutations.
Yeah. A handful of folks got commutations, I think about 8 or 9, and then everyone else got full pardons. And some of these folks have leveraged those pardons into relieving them of convictions for other offenses as well, which has really been quite incredible to see. A couple of the January 6th pardoned defendants have gone on to commit new crimes and to make the argument that the
guy just got pardoned for a gun crime who Trump gave him a second pardon.
He got a second pardon for a crime that was committed subsequent to the January 6th insurrection.
Now, there's kind of a long list of surprising pardons from Trump, and you've spoken out about his change of process and hasn't consulted with the Justice Department much. Is he does it himself largely, or?
Well, it seems like the pardon operation is running out of the White House for the most part, although the current pardon attorney, Ed Martin, is in the president's ear about some of these MAGA-related cases. Ed Martin, who now occupies my old job, is known for his work in the Stop the Steal movement. He's an election denier who is really a political operative masquerading as an attorney. He occupies the role of pardon attorney, and he also occupies the role of weaponization czar, he calls himself, in the Justice Department. So he's got sort of a dual role of dispensing pardons to MAGA supporters and loyalists and using the justice system to prosecute enemies of Donald Trump. It is a made-up position, but one that he has used in ways that are very destructive to the justice system.
Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, this is Martin. He was the acting U.S. attorney for D.C., right?
That's right.
But Trump pulled his nomination because even some Republicans were objecting to him. And he was a big defender of the January 6th rioters. Did he defend some of them?
He did. He represented some of them as a defense lawyer. And then as U.S. attorney, he presided over the dismissal of their cases.
And he believed that Trump won. He's a denier.
Yep. He was there on January 6th. He has described January 6th in Washington, D.C. as something along the lines of Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is the illustration that he has used to evoke what January 6th was like at the Capitol.
Well, that's obscene. So many Capitol police were injured. A few died. How's he running this operation?
Well, Martin has stated his views of the pardon power a couple of times on X in this term. No MAGA left behind. That's sort of his tagline. He believes that the clemency power should be used to...
That was a sheriff. I think he said that after the sheriff, Scott Jenkins, in Virginia, sheriff who...
Yes.
Got bribes, right?
Yeah, this sheriff was selling badges for cash. An elective sheriff was selling badges to people who wanted to use them to get out of traffic tickets or to be able to carry guns that they weren't otherwise legally allowed to carry. So he was selling badges. He was sentenced by a judge to 10 years in prison. And right before he was supposed to report to prison, Trump granted him a full pardon, seemingly on the suggestion of Ed Martin. Martin has also been supportive of pardons of other MAGA supporters that are really just not justified under any traditional understanding of the pardon power. there was an elected official in Nevada named Michelle Fiore, who actually was embezzling money from a police memorial fund. She was raising money to build a memorial to police officers who were killed in the line of duty, and she stole the money and spent it on plastic surgery. She got a full pardon from Donald Trump.
She said she was raising it for one purpose and got it for another. Okay.
Right. And she got a pardon before she spent a day in jail. She didn't have to pay back any of the money she took. These seem to be pardons that Ed Martin has his fingerprints on. And his fingerprints are all over the one of the 77 election deniers who were pardoned recently. That's a case in which Martin again tweeted, "No MAGA left behind." He sort of came to the defense of these folks who were involved in trying to overturn the 2020 election results.
Now, these were like some famous ones, Giuliani.
Yeah, there were a lot of folks in Trump's inner circle, Mark Meadows, John Eastman, Sidney Powell, a lot of the lawyers who were involved in the efforts to overturn the election results have been investigated and charged around the country with crimes involving interference with state election laws.
But these are, he can only give federal pardons, right?
Yeah, that's what's one of the things that's bizarre about this pardon is that it purports to grant pardons to people who have not actually been charged with any federal crimes. The president has very broad pardon power under the Constitution, but he does not have the power to pardon state law crimes, only federal crimes. So whether this pardon has any legal effect is in doubt. It seems like the idea was really more to send a message to supporters of Donald Trump that he has their back.
That he can violate, but next time violate a federal law.
Yeah, well, I think he's counting on folks not necessarily appreciating that distinction, but I think it's intended to send a message to his supporters in advance of the 2026 election that they can do what they need to do in the name of Donald Trump, and he will have their back. They can expect that they will be considered for relief through the pardon process for any crimes that they may commit in his name, which is really a scary message to be sending in the current climate where we already have a great deal of political violence. We had a major crisis in this country over the failure of a large part of our population to accept the results of a democratic election. So this is a very dangerous use of the pardon power, even if it doesn't really have a great legal effect on these cases.
Well, I mean, people can be careful to violate federal law so they can get their pardon. So they should do a little research on that.
Yeah. I think he's counting on people not doing that.
Now, some of this has been money, right?
Money has played a huge influence, yeah.
I looked up a couple of these. Do you know the case of Paul Walczak?
I do.
Okay, so he's this guy in Florida.
He was a neighbor of Donald Trump, just down the way from Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, okay. So it might be more than just money. It might be neighborliness. But he evidently submitted a pardon. What did he do? He stole money from his the tax money from his worker. He ran a nursing home, right?
He was a nursing home executive, and he was skimming money off the top of the paychecks of the doctors and nurses that he employed. And instead of paying the payroll taxes that he owed, he used it to buy a yacht. He used it to go shopping at Bergdorf Goodman. He used it to live a lavish lifestyle. Not as lavish as his mother's lifestyle, however. His mother, who owned a $11 million home down the street from Mar-a-Lago, was able to pay $1 million to attend a dinner with the president at Mar-a-Lago. And days later, Donald Trump granted her son a full pardon. Walczak had been sentenced by a federal judge to 18 months in prison. And that judge said that he was sentencing Walczak in prison to send a message that wealth in this country is not a get out of jail free card. That's what he said at Walczak's sentencing. Days later, Donald Trump said, "You're wrong, Your Honor. Wealth is a get-out-of-jail-free card in this country." He granted Walczak a full pardon. He doesn't have to spend a day in prison. He doesn't have to pay back any of the money that he stole. He is scot-free off the hook because his mother was able to leverage her proximity to Mar-a-Lago and her financial resources to get that pardon.
She went to like a $1 million dinner, right?
Million-dollar plate dinner, yep.
But she had also donated to him during the previous campaign.
She had, yep. She had donated to him previously, and she was, you know, in the right place at the right time with the right amount of money.
So this, I assume, hadn't been done before in our history. Has it that money kind of passed hands, or?
Well, during Trump's first presidency, there was some reporting about fees that were being charged by lawyers in Trump's inner circle to lobby for pardons on behalf of their clients, some cases successfully. But the amount of money at issue then seems almost quaint compared to what we are seeing now, and the thorough pervasiveness of financial and political influence in the pardon process is on a different order of magnitude during Trump's second term than it was during his first term.
Now, I watched 60 Minutes, and in that, they talked about CZ, this Changpeng Zhao, and that seemed pretty hinky.
Yeah, this is probably the most corrupt pardon in American history, considering the amount of money that's at issue and the nature of the offense that was committed. Zhao is originally a Chinese citizen who then became a citizen of the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, he created Binance, which is the largest cryptocurrency exchange.
Yeah, and Binance was operating in violation of U.S. anti-money laundering laws. The U.S. has a system that requires people who operate cryptocurrency exchanges like Binance to ensure that their platform is not being used to funnel money to criminal organizations and terrorists. Zhao decided that he was not going to comply with those laws and allowed Binance to be used to send money to ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and to facilitate all sorts of criminal activity. The U.S. government made the determination that his conduct was endangering U.S. national security. They prosecuted him. He agreed to pay a very large fine. And then Donald Trump swooped in and granted him a full pardon.
He spent some time in prison too, right? Like
he spent four months in prison. And according to news reports, he started researching how to get a pardon while he was in prison. And by the time he was released,
it's a good use of time, I would think.
Yeah, not a bad use of time. When he came out of prison, he began working to help prop up the Trump family cryptocurrency company. The Trump sons have been very involved in founding this company in connection with their father, called World Liberty Financial. And Zhao saw an opportunity to boost the success of the company. In the biggest thing he did to facilitate that was he brokered a $2 billion investment in the company to ensure the successful launch of it. And that has carried the company to this day, earning tens of millions or maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars in profits for the Trump family and people in Trump's inner circle. And after he did that, he got this pardon from Donald Trump. He does not meet any of the traditional criteria for consideration of a presidential pardon. He would never have been recommended for a pardon under the Department of Justice's longstanding criteria. But Donald Trump doesn't care about those sorts of things. He granted him a full pardon, despite the fact that he's someone that the U.S. government identified as endangering our national security.
So this is very disturbing, of course.
Very, very. Yeah. I mean, this should be alarming to all Americans. Nothing that's happening in the pardon space is really a partisan issue. This is an issue that gets at the integrity of our justice system, our safety in our country, the rule of law. So it honestly has surprised me, and maybe this sounds naive and Pollyannish, that, you know, we haven't seen outrage on both sides of the aisle about how the president is using the pardon power to the detriment of the American people who he is entrusted to serve.
Well, you know, the founders gave this to the president.
They did, and they assumed that the president would use it in the public interest. I don't think that it occurred to any of our founding fathers that the president would use the pardon power systematically in his own personal interest at the expense of the American people.
And this, I don't know, we couldn't get a constitutional amendment to change that, and how would we change it?
Well, because it's in the Constitution, you're right, it would take a constitutional amendment to rein it in or to remove it from the president. And given that, you know, we've got a Congress that could barely pass a budget to fund the government, a constitutional amendment does not seem likely in the near term. But there is much more that Congress could be doing to demand accountability and transparency in the pardon space. They could require that the president promptly disclose pardons that are granted and provide a rationale to the American people for the use of the pardon power.
They aren't disclosed now?
Not in any systematic way. Throughout history, even in Trump's first administration, there is generally a press release that accompanies the granting of a pardon that explains who's been pardoned and generally some rationale as to why. That has not been happening during this administration.
Really?
And we're sometimes finding out about pardons after the fact. Sometimes days have passed since the pardon was actually signed. They're just sort of trickling out, which raises questions as to whether there may be more pardons that have been signed that we don't yet know about.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lizalyn. Now, you may have heard me talk about OneSkin before. I had started to notice the inside of my arms were beginning to look like crepe paper, which makes a bit of sense. I'm 74 years old, you know. Well, crepe paper, no more. And that's all thanks to OneSkin. My skin is now hydrated and moisturized. And I'm not alone. Customers consistently rave about how their skin is smoother, firmer and healthier looking, with results that get better over time, improving both the appearance and the overall health of their skin. No wonder OneSkin's products have over 10,000 five-star reviews. That's because all of OneSkin's products are designed to layer seamlessly and replace multiple steps in your routine, making skin health easier and smarter at every age. Now, I've never been one for a skincare routine, but OneSkin makes it as simple as can be. All you have to do is pat your skin dry and apply twice a day. At the helm of this iconic skincare brand is their founding all-women team of longevity scientists with PhDs in stem cell biology, skin regeneration, and tissue engineering. OneSkin is changing how we age by focusing on skin and scalp health at the cellular level. Powered by their patented OS01 peptide, every formula is designed to keep skin healthier, stronger, and more resilient over time. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code Franken at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code Franken. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
And we are back with Liz Oyer. Well, we know about George Santos.
We do, yeah, yeah. George Santos got a commutation of his sentence from Donald Trump, so he's out of jail. He's back on the Washington party scene already. He's been photographed in papers, you know, at parties, wining and dining, that sort of
thing. Who's inviting him to parties?
I don't know. Yeah. He's apparently
maybe he's just crashing them.
I think he's you know re-ingratiated himself with some people. I think that basically what happened here is he's put himself in a situation where he's now going to be shilling for Donald Trump for the rest of his life. He is deeply indebted to Donald Trump, and so now he's going to be shilling for Trump, whatever it takes, wherever.
Well, how valuable is that? I mean, in other words, as your, you know, your spokesman, George Santos, as your qualifier.
Yeah. I think, you know, shilling for Donald Trump sounds like a fate worse than prison, personally. Mm-hmm. I would have just served out that sentence and avoided that if I were him.
Well, how long did he have? He had quite a few,
yeah,
a number
he
of years,
had several
right?
more years left to serve. And he committed the type of crime that is generally taken very seriously because he was an elected official at the time that he committed it. So, you know, very rarely are elected officials granted clemency under most presidents. However, mm-hmm. Donald Trump has, across his two administrations, pardoned about 20 elected officials who committed crimes that involved corruption of their public office, betrayals of the public trust. George Santos is one of those people. He betrayed his constituents and also the victims who he defrauded. And as a result of this pardon, he doesn't have to pay back any of the money that he took. And he's, you know, back on the streets living his life.
It was a commutation. So is that different in terms of whether it relieves you of that?
So Trump is doing something. Typically, commutations reduce the prison portion of the sentence only. But that's not how Donald Trump has been doing commutations. All of the commutations that Trump has granted during this term have also wiped out all of the other aspects of the sentence, which includes any financial penalties. So in George Santos's case, he was supposed to have to pay back around $300,000, but the commutation wiped out that obligation. And it
really?
Also... Yeah. And it also canceled.
Hence, he can afford to go to these parties and wear something nice.
Yeah, it resets him financially. And it also eliminated the requirement of supervised release. Typically, at the end of a sentence, there is a period of essentially probation to ensure mm-hmm. accountability to the courts during a transition period. That was also wiped out by the commutation.
Let me ask you about Ghislaine Maxwell. I don't know. Did you read the interview, with Todd Blanche?
Yes.
Interviewed her in prison.
Yeah.
The old prison, not
yep.
the new nice prison. That interview was published, right, and released. Did
it
you
was,
happen to read
yep.
it?
Yep, I did.
Okay, I didn't read it, but I kind of got the gist. I saw some of the excerpts.
Yeah.
Once you read it, it didn't seem that what she said was that Trump knew nothing about what was going on, according to her.
Yes, she said what Blanche wanted to hear. I mean, she was playing a part in this interview, right? Like, she was there for a purpose, which was to exonerate Donald Trump from any improper conduct in connection with Jeffrey Epstein, and she played that part. Todd Blanche, who was interviewing her, did not push back on any of her assertions, and shockingly, he didn't show her any documents that seemed to contradict what she said in that interview. He just let her say what he wanted to hear and said thank you very much and transferred her to this nice new prison.
Did he say anywhere in it you were convicted by a jury? And
one thing that has kind of flown under the radar is that the prosecutor who secured the conviction of Ghislaine Maxwell, the person who knows
yes,
more about that case
Comey's
than anyone,
daughter.
Yes, is Jim Comey's daughter, Maureen Comey, who was fired very shortly before that interview took place.
So she could have done that interview and it would have been a little different.
In any ordinary scenario in the Justice Department, she's the one who would have done that interview because she's more knowledgeable than anybody about the case. It seems like her firing was an effort to get her out of the way so that this interview could not be fact-checked by a career professional in the Justice Department.
Well, I don't think they would have sent her.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the idea that the number two official at the Justice Department goes to a prison to interview someone who has been convicted of a very serious sex crime against children, that just doesn't happen. That really defies all norms as far as the Justice Department and its work. And the fact that somebody in the building who was much more informed than Todd Blanche was fired shortly before the interview took place really just raises a lot of alarm bells. I mean, the interview appears to have been conducted in Blanche's capacity as Donald Trump's personal lawyer, not in his capacity as the Deputy Attorney General for the United States of America.
And of course, soon after that, she was moved.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can tell you as a former federal public defender that the Bureau of Prisons has very rigid policies and procedures in place about where they designate people to serve their prison sentences. And one of those rules is that if you have been convicted of a sex crime, you cannot serve your sentence in a minimum security camp. The reason for that is that these camps have open boundaries. Mm-hmm. There's no secure perimeter around the camp. So in theory, you could walk off and go into the community and continue to harm children. So sex offenders are not allowed to serve their time in camps. And it requires a waiver of that policy at the highest levels to transfer a sex offender to a minimum security camp. I have never heard of it happening ever before.
Obviously, and she's getting special treatment there, meals delivered to her dorm. I think she exercises, gets to exercise privately or something. And she, the warden has prepared her document for the commutation of her sentence.
That's what's been reported. I mean, I want to remind folks that she's still in prison, okay? And prison isn't so great no matter what kind of prison you're in. But she is in a prison where she has more freedom of movement, fewer restrictions than she would at this other prison. And she appears to be getting special treatment even within that prison compared to the other incarcerated women. It's no surprise that she's working on a commutation petition, but the fact that she's getting access to prison resources to assist her in doing that is unusual. And the big point about the commutation application is that this was clearly something that she is engaging in the hopes of a quid pro quo. Hopefully by exonerating Donald Trump, Trump will pardon her and she will get out from under this 20-year prison sentence that she's currently serving. She doesn't have any path through the courts for relief at this point. So the sure. only way out from under is to get Donald Trump to commute her sentence.
When would you expect that? I mean, obviously that would not happen before the midterms, I don't think.
You know, the thing is about the pardons that have been issued to date is none of them make any sense. Like, I wouldn't have thought that Zhengpeng Zhao would have gotten a pardon when he did. I wouldn't have really thought that any of these highly political pardons would have been granted ever. Somebody would have told Donald Trump, this is going to alienate the American people if you do this. It's not a good look. But he's not responding to that advice. So I don't know what he could do with this case or when. He may decide that he wants to do it at any point. He just doesn't seem like he's following any rational, logical plot with his grants of clemency during his second term.
Well, a commutation of her sentence would be different than CZ. America would go apeshit. In terms of America would be outraged. You saw the vote this week by Congress and
it would certainly cause outrage on a different level if she were to receive a commutation of sentence. And one thing that is really just shocking about the discussion of it is that Trump is refusing to rule it out. He's been asked about it numerous times and he says things like, well, I can do it. I'm allowed to do it. Right. I haven't thought about it. I don't know if I'm going to do it. And by even entertaining the possibility, he is really making a mockery of the seriousness of the offense that she was convicted of. And he is betraying the victims of her crime. No one at the Justice Department or in the White House appears to have sat down with the victims to hear their stories. It is required under DOJ policies that victims are consulted at every step of the way, but there's no sign that Todd Blanche consulted with the victims.
So that's part of the process. That's part of the pardon process.
It's required by law. It's required by DOJ internal policies and procedures. In the pardon process, it's required that victims have the opportunity to weigh in before the Department of Justice will even consider recommending that the president grant clemency. So that is a longstanding feature of the process. And it's
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. And it's the victims would be consulted ordinarily. The prosecuting U.S. attorney would be consulted. The sentencing judge would be consulted. I mean, the victim's input is the most important, but there are other stakeholders who also would weigh in, and all of that would be taken under consideration and an evaluation would be made. And I can tell you that under any administration in history, the recommendation as to Ghislaine Maxwell would be to deny her application out of hand. So the fact that this president is continuing to string this along and won't just categorically say, no, I'm not going to do that, it's really just shocking in and of itself. Even if he doesn't eventually do it, the fact that he continues to entertain the possibility, continues to allow the victims to live with the knowledge that this could happen, it's re-traumatizing to them. And it's really just a disgrace to the office.
But it strings her along, Maxwell along.
It does, yeah. It keeps her on the hook. That's part of what he's doing systematically with pardons. He is keeping a lot of people on the hook by dangling the possibility that he could grant them a pardon. Whether or not he has any intention of doing it, nobody knows. But he did the same thing with George Santos before he ultimately did commute his sentence. He's doing that with Diddy. He's doing that in a lot of the high-profile cases where he won't rule it out. He's keeping people on the hook. People are paying lawyers and lobbyists in his inner circle huge sums of money to try to increase their chances. People are offering their political support to Donald Trump to curry favor with him. And he's amassing power and wealth just by dangling the possibility of pardons.
Is there anyone who Trump has pardoned that you would have recommended a pardon for? Or are you?
Well, the pardons during this second term have been really pretty horrific across the board. I can't say that there's not a single one in there that might be worthwhile, but overall, they're really quite bad.
Yeah, give me an egregious one that I haven't mentioned. That we haven't.
So the most egregious one that you haven't mentioned that jumps to mind is the pardon of Trevor Milton. Trevor Milton founded a company called Nikola, which was supposedly...
He's a billionaire, right?
He was a billionaire.
Okay. Yeah.
He was a billionaire on paper because his fortune was built on a fraud. He was supposed to be building the world's first electric-powered semi-truck, and the whole thing was a fraud. He didn't have the technology. He filmed an ad that supposedly showed a prototype of the truck driving... And it turned out that a bunch of people pushed this truck down the hill. The truck didn't actually work. And it was just a massive fraud on his investors. And most of his investors were, you know, mom and pop investors, retail investors, people who had invested retirement savings in his company, pension funds that had invested on behalf of government workers. He was convicted at trial of defrauding his investors, and the government was seeking nearly $700 million in restitution to compensate his victims for their losses. Donald Trump swooped in before Milton was sent to prison to serve his time, and he pardoned him. He granted him a full pardon, so he didn't have to go to prison, and he doesn't have to pay back any of this money. Milton had donated about $1.8 million to Trump's campaign and related causes, and he leveraged that donation into a full pardon. And nobody consulted the victims, nobody consulted the prosecutors on the case, nobody consulted the sentencing judge. He just got this full pardon from Donald Trump based seemingly on political donations.
Jesus.
And meanwhile, there are thousands and thousands of ordinary Americans whose applications are piling up at the Justice Department. When I last checked, there were about 15,000 applications pending. The number now has not been updated since before the government shutdown, but I've heard that it's closer to 20,000 people who are patiently waiting their turn.
That's a lot of applications. I mean, I saw the numbers for when Obama was president and when Biden was president. Biden, of course, gave clemency to a much higher percentage of those who applied.
Yeah. The issue here is that, you know, there's no path forward for ordinary people who are deserving in this administration. And that wasn't entirely the case during Trump's first presidency. And I want to acknowledge that there were some worthy people who received clemency during Donald Trump's first presidency. There were some very deserving people who got clemency based on merit, not based on money and political connections. There were some who received clemency then who were not deserving. But, you know, there were some really legitimate ones in addition to the illegitimate ones. Now it's all illegitimate. The whole process has been thoroughly corrupted and delegitimized.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And now you go as a lawyer.
Yeah, I'm on all the social media platforms as Lawyer Oyer, and I'm trying to inform the public about these abuses of the pardon power and other legal issues that should really concern all of us as Americans.
And that's your Substack. That's your Substack, Lawyer Oyer?
Yeah, I'm Lawyer Oyer on Substack as well as Instagram and TikTok.
Okay, great. And well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for highlighting these important issues.
Well, you bet. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.